Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average down 181 at 17,919. The S&P 500 Index down 9 at 2,119. NASDAQ Composite down 10 at 5,208. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 3 basis points at 2.34%. Oil up 21 cents at $50.36 per barrel. Gold up $3.30 at $1,102 per ounce. Silver up 18 cents at $14.95. Earnings reporting season continues with about a quarter of the S&P 500 companies scheduled to report this week. Quick look at some of the gainers. Harley-Davidson posted second quarter earnings and revenue that topped expectations. Travelers posted a second quarter profit that was better than expected due to fewer losses from catastrophes. Among the decliners, United Technologies issued a profit warning and announced that its aerospace and elevator units will be below expectations due to a strong dollar and China's economic slump. IBM's second quarter earnings fell 17%. Revenue dropped 13%. Verizon posted better-than-expected earnings, but revenue missed estimates. Lexmark swung to a loss and announced it will cut 500 jobs. The big news in earnings came from some of the biggest names after the closing bell, Apple and Microsoft. Apple sold 47.5 million iPhones, a 35% gain for the period that ended in June. Analysts had anticipated 48.8 million shipments. Net income in the fiscal third quarter ended in June, $10.7 billion. Works out to $1.85 per share. Revenue rose 33% to $49.6 billion. Analysts on average had forecast third quarter profit of $1.81 a share on sales of $49.4 billion. So they miss on earnings, slight beat on revenue. Gross margin 39.7%, topping the company's outlook for 38.5% to 39.5%. Apple shares down about 8% in after-hours trading. Now, it probably won't make any difference for Apple, but I hear that Lindsey Graham is in the market for a new phone. Even before the earnings report, Apple was having some problems. Users experienced a problem with multiple iCloud services, including Apple Music, Beats 1, and the App Store, where outages knocked out service for up to 4 hours earlier today. No report on the cause of the outage. Every day it seems we hear about a new cyber attack, but this may be one of the scariest stories yet. Security experts are urging owners of Fiat Chrysler vehicles to update their onboard software after hackers took control of a Jeep over the internet and disabled the engine and brakes and crashed it into a ditch. A security hole in Fiat Chrysler's Uconnect internet-enabled software allows hackers to remotely access the car's systems and take control, unlike some other cyber attacks on cars where only the entertainment system is vulnerable. The Uconnect hack affects driving systems from the GPS and windshield wipers to the steering, brakes, and engine control. The Uconnect system is installed in hundreds of thousands of cars made by Fiat Chrysler since late 2013. Microsoft reported its largest ever quarterly loss due to a $7.5 billion write-down after the purchase of Nokia's handset unit. Excluding the Nokia charge and cost related to job cuts, Microsoft said profit in the fourth quarter ended June 30th was 62 cents per share. Sales were $22.2 billion. Analysts on average projected profit of 58 cents on sales of $22 billion. Yahoo reported second quarter revenue excluding sales shared with partner websites. Little changed at $1.04 billion in the second quarter. Profit excluding items such as stock-based compensation was 16 cents per share. Analysts had projected on average sales of $1.03 billion and profit of 19 cents per share. And then Yahoo lowered third quarter revenue guidance. The Federal Reserve has finalized the capital surcharge amounts for the nation's largest financial firms or systemically important financial institutions. For example, the surcharges range from 4.5% for J.P. Morgan to 1% for BNY Mellon. Taken together, the group's capital cushion will be more than $200 billion larger than if the surcharge was not implemented. The Fed, meanwhile, offered a reprieve to GE Capital from more intensive regulation after the company promised to cut its assets by more than half. The financial industry worries that when the Fed's tightening plans take hold, a sell-off in the massive U.S. bond market could ensue and possibly be exacerbated by a lack of bank buyers willing to jump in. Banks, including primary dealers who act as market makers for U.S. Treasuries, have cut their bond inventories in the past few years in response, they say, to tougher capital requirements, reducing a liquidity buffer for the fixed income market. Private and public comments by Fed officials show that they do not share Wall Street's degree of concern about liquidity and do not believe that capital rules are solely to blame for the bond market's growing tendency to seize up. Effectively, regulators are telling the industry it is the responsibility of banks, funds, and other market players to protect themselves. The Fed's assertive stance is setting the stage for more volatile fixed income markets, where liquidity droughts could be the price of doing business in bond markets. The message, in public addresses, reports to Congress, and even an investigation into market turmoil last October, is that less liquidity is a necessary consequence of regulatory reform and fitting for an economy that is getting ready for tighter monetary policy. The Dodd-Frank Act is 5 years old. Half a decade later, the debate around the law continues. Regulators are pushing to finalize still lingering projects. New government powers have yet to be tested. Lawmakers in both parties continue to question whether the law's central goal of ensuring too big to fail is a thing of the past was actually achieved. There are undoubtedly major parts of Dodd-Frank that are fully up and running. Perhaps most notable is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Elsewhere, regulators have put in place new checks on financial derivatives, begun implementing new rules in the mortgage market, and taken steps aimed at predicting and preventing broad new threats to the overall financial system. But it's estimated that just 63% of Dodd-Frank rules have been finalized, with 21% of the required rules not yet even proposed. And the nation's biggest banks still need to prove to regulators that they can safely be wound down in bankruptcy should disaster hit. Citigroup's consumer bank has been ordered to pay $700 million in relief to borrowers for illegal credit card practices. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau said that about 7 million customer accounts were affected by Citibank's deceptive marketing practices, which included misrepresenting cost and fees and charging customers for services they did not receive. Citibank told telemarketers to entice customers with a free 30-day trial period, but the bank would sometimes charge during the first 30 days anyway. Or customers were left with the impression that the free service would go away after 30 days if they did nothing. Instead, after a month, they started being charged regular fees. Citi also charged some customers for services it wasn't even providing, such as credit monitoring. And while Citi was caught, that doesn't mean they're the only company pulling these shenanigans on customers. The Securities and Exchange Commission has opened an investigation into the companies with business links to FIFA. Reuters said that Nike is probably one of the companies being scrutinized by the SEC, even though it has not been named or charged with any wrongdoing. That's because the indictment of FIFA officials by U.S. prosecutors described a $160 million 10-year deal signed by Sportswear Company A, which just happens to match exactly the details of Nike's 1996 deal in Brazil to become the footwear and apparel supplier and sponsor of the Brazilian national soccer team. New York Department of Financial Services officials have subpoenaed several of the executives of Promontory Financial Group, a financial services consultancy, including an executive who testified before Congress 2 years ago. It's part of a long investigation into potential conflicts of interest at the firm related to its work for the British bank Standard Chartered, which was suspected of processing billions of dollars on behalf of Iran. The regulator is looking at whether Promontory, under pressure from the bank and its lawyers, sanitized a report to NYDFS to minimize the volume of allegedly illegal transactions. Toshiba's CEO is out after an accounting scandal. Toshiba's president and CEO, Hisao Tanaka, has resigned after an internal investigation found the company has been cooking its books for several years. The company overstated profit by $1.2 billion over several years, almost triple its initial profit. Qualcomm expected to conduct a strategic review that may result in the breakup of the company. The chipmaker expected to announce plans to lay off more than 10% of its 30,000 employees. The expected layoffs are a part of what is likely to be a strategic review of the company, which could lead to the eventual spinoff of its chip business from the highly profitable patent licensing business. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reports global land and sea surface temperatures from January through June were 1.53 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. The highest since recording started in 1880. June was the fourth month this year to break its monthly temperature record, along with February, March, and May, and it marks the hottest 6 months on record. One side effect is that warming ocean waters are expected to result in a strong El Niño weather pattern in the second half of the year, which could bring some much-needed rain to California and the Southwest. And while the Southwest is in need of moisture, too much weather could lead to rain-related destruction. On Friday, heavy rains pounded the bone-dry Southern California region, washing out an elevated section of I-10 near Desert Center, one of the major highways connecting California and Arizona. The Pacific is also expected to see more hurricanes and typhoons this season. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. Text, audio, and the free podcast at eatthebankers.com.